Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Chris,
you had days. And you made what I can only imagine is the hardest decision of your life. But I wasn't a part of it.
Yeah, because it wasn't about you.
I just wish I'd had the opportunity to be able to say all the right things, to tell you I'd be there no matter what, no matter what choice you made.
And that would have been nicer, but you know what? We both know you, and we know that you would have demanded we find another way.
And there is no other way.
Scared?
Come here. I know. I'm scared too.
Hey, everybody, we're going to get started.
That was fast.
Yeah, I'm going to get started.
Because usually you're just like, oh, I'm going to press the button.
No, I'm going to press the button.
Oh, are you guys ready? I'm going to press
moving.
Are you guys ready? I'm going to press the button. That's usually how it starts.
It's a zombie episode.
What?
It's a zombie episode.
Oh, my God.
Don't worry. I'm going to do all the normal things, Dan.
All the normal opening stuff.
Zombies?
I just wanted to get started with swiftness and alacrity.
That sounds like the Z word. Zombies?
Oh, yes. Okay. It's a zombie episode, so no doubt there will be much to discuss.
Zombies?
Yep. Yes, indeed. So, buttons. What is it that we're supposed to do? Okay, first I have to say... I'm trying to remember.
Now this is such a thing now.
It's not a thing.
It's becoming a thing.
No.
It's like, okay, we got to make sure so Dan's happy.
No, it's not
so
about
Dan's
making...
Dan's happy.
It's not about making Dan happy.
It's about making Dan happy so he doesn't whine.
No, it has nothing to do with whining. It's just, you know, Daddy gets the belt out.
Why don't we switch it up? Why doesn't Jesse start us off? So, because Jesse wants to talk, obviously, and I
tried to start that one time, and you were like, no, I'm going to play a clip now.
No. Okay, look, my point was... is that we had a pattern going, and it was like this pattern was working out.
I don't think done the pattern this time.
We do the pattern all the time. My point is that the pattern, like, it's fine. I don't care who says what. I just kind of want to know ahead of time who is saying what. That's all.
Oh, ahead of time.
Yeah, the pattern.
But you know what? We don't even have to do that. Why don't we just throw all that, say nuts to that, and throw it all
nuts
to the wind?
Nuts to you, McGillicuddy.
Let's just start on a clean slate and do whatever, and we'll see where the sound files lie. How's that sound for you?
Hey, Jesse, why don't you? I think Dan's got a good idea.
Because the only reason this pattern happened is because we kept doing the same thing over and over. That I started to detect that a certain pattern was happening. That's how the sound came into play. It wasn't like, hey, let's do this. It was like, this is just how the pattern
it was an emergent pattern
that occurred, you know?
And we're all about emergent patterns and organicness.
Fair point.
So Jesse, why don't you go ahead and what you can do is you can say, welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I still welcome you.
There we go. Okay, good. And then I think next Dan would like us to say which number episode
it
is.
Why don't I say it? Okay. No, it doesn't make sense.
I think you're right, Dan. This is a night of experiments. The Strange New Worlds is experimenting with a whole new genre, the zombie genre.
The Z word.
Zombies?
So let's experiment with our own podcast format. Dan, you give us, which number podcast is this?
This is podcast, It's Got Star Trek podcast number 298.
I think that's correct, yeah. It's
damn,
as good a guess as any.
Dude.
And we're watching Strange New Worlds, and the episode is called...
The Flower MacGuffin episode. Oh, yes. Shuttle to Kenfori.
I am ready to face my destiny.
Yeah, Shuttle to Ken Forey. All right.
Ken Forey. Ken Forey, good buddy.
Ken Forey. Shuttle to Ken Forey. Which is interesting that it's a zombie episode.
Zombies?
Considering. I like this new game. This is another organic game that we've developed. This is fantastic.
Yeah. Yep.
Hybrid super crop.
The Z word episode. But shuttle
that
to...
Sounds like the Z word.
The shuttle to Ken Forey sounds almost more like a black and white 1940s movie. Mm. You know,
yeah,
like a road trip movie.
I can feel that.
Yeah,
I can feel that. I can feel that.
I don't know. Neither of you appear convinced by that particular observation.
I just never thought of it that way before, yeah. And I don't think I would choose to think of it that way again.
All right. Well, you let us know at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com if what you think the title "Shuttle to Ken Forey" evokes.
Hmm.
Okay, clearly this was a dead-end conversation, so I was like, hey, let's start with the title. People have all sorts of clever things to say about this title. What does it mean, shuttle to Ken Forey? This is being very literal. They took a shuttle to Ken Forey.
Yeah, I know. There's really, what else is there to really
Captain
say about
Captain Pike
it?
And Dr. Mbega, they got on a shuttle, and they went to Ken Forey. Shell got blowed up.
Shell got blowed up.
Yeah.
Good plan.
Bunch of other crazy shit happened.
We came in and blowed it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter indeed. All right, but we will be discussing the shuttle to Ken Forey.
Copy.
But first, we do have...
We're going butt first into this.
We have an email.
What?
And we have a voicemail.
No.
About previous episode discussions that we need to address first.
Oh,
so,
wow.
First, we have an email from Joseph Shorter the Fourth.
Okay.
Joseph J. Shorter the Fourth.
Okay.
Who is a longtime fan, has written
I don't
before.
Get it.
I mean, just a name. Oh. It's a regular old name.
Where would I stay?
I couldn't tell you, Dan. I mean, I'm happy.
Chief O'Brien!
Stay right there. Okay, just click buttons now. Dan's pulling out all the favorites.
Not jokingly.
Just a crazy idea.
All right, so this refer. In fact, I think this is something that you brought up, Dan, in the very first episode of the season, the Gorny episode.
The Gorny. I'm so Gorny.
Hegemony Part 2.
Don't make me Gorny.
There was the whole business with Battelle saying you shouldn't have done that.
I'm going to Ken Forey so I can get Gorny.
Yeah.
So Dan, you pay attention to the email like this. I think this references something that you commented on.
Yikes.
Joseph J. Shorter the Fourth says, I think Battelle's quote, "you shouldn't have done that," is foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. Remember, she was the prosecutor in Number One's trial, and earlier in the episode, Chapel and Spock each mentioned that it would be against regulation to use her blood, in other words, Number One's blood, Una's blood, because of her genetic engineering business. Una even told Pike that she wouldn't report that she donated her blood because the mission they were on was unofficial. I think Battelle will feel duty, not duty. Duty bound to follow the regulations about such transfusions, and this may ultimately be the reason Una is not the first officer when Kirk becomes captain. In other words, Una may be in deep duty, not duty.
Okay, I don't know if you remember, but that's pretty much what the same thing as I suggested in that episode.
Yes, I believe Joe is supporting you. He says, as always, y'all have a great show, Joe. And yes,
thanks, Agamus!
He is agreeing with you. Now, I didn't catch her saying that the first time. Mm. I did go back and look, and I was like, or you played the clip, I forget exactly why, but it was like, absolutely, now I really do. I do think that there's some vibe there. Mm. And then what we're going to discuss tonight on this week's episode, where there's some Gorny business, which we thought maybe the Gorn stuff was done. They did a bit of a bait and a switch with...
Bait and a switch.
Battelle being healthy last episode was like, nope, actually not. We gotta have a new plot that involves her not being so healthy again. So we'll see where that goes.
Return of the Gorn.
But yes, so Joe and Dan are in agreement there, and I think I'm convinced that something's going on there.
I got a hunch.
Not 100% sure if it's going to relate 100% to Una or to, I don't know, like just causing more tragedy for Pike. I don't know. I really don't know. I hope it's not that.
May have a situation.
But it will be interesting to see where that goes. Mm-hmm. Where would
Better
it
Better not stay? Risk it.
Where would it stay? Where would that plot point stay?
Where would I stay?
Indeed.
Where?
Thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, Agamus.
Now, moving along to our voicemail, we have a voicemail from Drew Barker.
Tell me!
And this is also referring to, I believe, if I recall correctly, Dan has a particular theory, a linguistic theory about how you pronounce R's and vowels and A's.
Barely.
In British English, which he...
I don't know.
How does it go, Dan? What is it? You say banana or something?
There's got to be a better set of words that I can use.
Yeah, but you keep using the banana.
Because I couldn't think of this. The best thing I could think of was banana something. I can't even remember what it is I said, but it was banana. It was a sentence that didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It was a senseless sentence. But a banana wrong or something like that? Or no, banana dog. Okay,
the deal was that in your version of British English, which you just kept referring to as like British English.
Your version of
it. Which is probably a specific neighborhood.
It's like banana eat?
Yeah, it's about how a word that follows a vowel makes the vowel turn into an R.
So if the first word ends with a vowel and the next word begins with a vowel, I think you insert an R in between them.
All right.
I think that's how it goes.
Well,
I can't even remember now, like, what, because I knew this exactly, and I can't remember if the next word has to begin with a consonant or a vowel.
Let's hear what Drew Barker says about this.
Hello, folks.
Hi.
Now, I don't mean to stick me oar in, as I'm sure it won't make a tuppence of difference. And I couldn't care less, really, as it is flogging a dead horse and feels like a storm in a teacup. But I did the maths, and it feels like you are being out of order to us Brits. Now, I don't mean to blow my own trumpet, but I am a born and bred Londoner. It is pronounced, that banana got angry, so I took it to the hospital in the boot of my car. On the other hand, and not to stick a spanner in the works, but I think you folks are the ones that speak funny like with your aluminium and tomatoes and stuff. And I'm not going to touch with a barge pole your game of hand egg that you call football. Anyhow, love the podcast. Have a nice day.
Yikes.
Thanks, Agamus.
Thank you, Drew.
Thank you, Drew.
So that lays it out there very clearly, I think.
About
the bananas and the lorries and the boots.
Yeah, maybe
the
I was
boot of your lorry.
Maybe I was saying banana angry, and I was saying like banana angry.
You were saying something about banana angry. Anyway. Well, thank you again for clearing that up for us, Drew.
Yeah, it's the intrusive R when a word ending...
I thought you were going to say it's the intrusive thoughts.
When a word ending in certain vowels followed by a word that begins with a vowel, you put an R in between.
Oh.
So banana angry would be banana angry.
All right, good.
He said that we talk about... No, the British people are the one that say aluminium.
Yeah, I think he was implying that because we say aluminum.
Yeah. You're saying the funny way you pronounce aluminium.
Precisely, he was saying it in the quote unquote correct way.
Well, I was having a difficult time.
Laboratory.
They say oregano.
Yeah. And aubergine instead of eggplant.
Yeah.
I speak too much American, and it's hard for me to as an American, it's hard for me to understand things that happen outside of my bubble.
It's hard.
It's outside of your ken, you might say.
My ken.
Yeah, it's outside of your ken.
Ken and Barbie?
It's
or
outside
like,
of your Barbie.
I said that once at work and got a bunch of perplexed faces. People were like, do you know what the deal is here? And I was like, they were like, Patrick, what's the deal? And I was like, I don't know. That's outside of my ken. And they're like, what are you talking about? I was like, you know, this is not my bailiwick. And then everyone got mad at me.
By the time you say bailiwick, they're going to hit you.
Yes, Dan, I know you have a new favorite sound.
It's not my favorite. It's actually, isolating that sound makes me realize like how poorly they recorded that sound, because it sounds like shit when you play it. But that's how the original game was,
shit.
So I need to get an updated one that doesn't sound so shit.
I don't know. It's fun. The nostalgia. Yeah. You know, the crunchiness is part of the
nostalgia. Drew, I appreciate your email, and I feel a lot more educated now, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I think so.
Or at least schooled.
Okay, so back to the episode, Shuttle to Kenfari.
You're a greedy son of a bitch.
Always wanting to go back to the episode.
Yes, indeed. It's a zombie episode.
Zombies.
Zombies.
All right. Now, I hope I'm not ruining a joke here. I don't think I am. But now that I've cottoned on to what Dan's doing here, where anytime the word zombie is mentioned, he's going to play the zombie word. I'm wondering if...
Patrick, do you have any evidence of that?
Evidence!
I've just noticed a pattern.
He might have a crazy idea.
It's another pattern.
It's just a crazy idea.
Yes, but my crazy idea...
Crazy.
I guess it is, that at some point, and when I say the word zombie,
Zombies?
But instead of you playing Pike saying zombies.
Zombies?
Sorry. That one floated by me for some reason.
That instead you're going to play the Cranberries singing.
Oh.
Zombie!
Oh, no.
Zombie!
That would have been a good one. I missed out on that one.
Zombie!
That was a missed opportunity on my part.
Indeed. But something to workshop for the future. If there's ever
sleep in the hay, I sleep in the hay. Zombie. That's how it goes, right?
Is that what she says?
Sleep in the hay.
That can't be the lyric.
Sleep in hay, zombie.
Is that the lyric?
Sleep in the hay, zombie.
I don't think
zombie.
I think the zombie.
Flambe.
Tay zonde. Purple. No, blood purple rain.
Disagree with me chocolate all you rain. Want. It's not your call to make.
Chocolate rain, indeed. So it's rain. A zombie episode. So before we get into the nitty gritty
zombies
of the particular episode, I thought it would make sense for us to briefly discuss our own background and interest in, or lack thereof, the zombie.
Oh, hard to keep up
zombies
with
genre.
Better safe than sorry.
Hard to like get one sound on deck and then have to like improvise to get to that whole zombies sounds. I don't think I can hold this up for the whole episode.
Well, we're gonna find out.
Now that we've highlighted it, we've ruined the whole listening experience because everyone's just gonna be waiting to see if I play zombies after I say someone says zombies.
Yeah. So. Regarding this particular genre, what is your all's history? What's your all's interest in zombie stuff?
Oh my god!
I tried not zombies. To say. I really tried. Not
this is really bringing me. This is dragging me down. Man.
I'm
show off.
I'm not particularly into zombies.
Zombies.
Yeah, I said it four times. Can I bank? Can I bank them up?
Every time when I say zombies, can it do that? Zombies.
Oh man, no, because I'm
zombies.
I'm banking them. No, you're making me do more work.
Oh man,
I'm trying to go the opposite direction.
What ridiculous criteria for moving through life we set ourselves up with?
I know.
Yeah. No, you actually have to do it. You promised.
So anyway, this genre, so Jesse, you're saying you're not that into it. I've been somewhat neutral on this particular genre. There's certainly some movies like the old school, Walking Dead, King of the Dead. What do they call it? You know, Night of the Living Dead. All that business. There's some interesting social commentary in some of those.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely been some cool variations in this particular genre. But it's not been like one of my main genres.
So I tend to be into most things.
You forced my hand.
Zombies.
I tend to be into most of those kinds of things. Not every single one, but most of them. And if you watch like Night of the Living Dead, that was like less social commentary and more just really kind of pretty fucking creepy.
It was the other one at the mall now, that had all the social. Yeah.
What happens is it becomes less focused on the monster and it more becomes focused on how humans like treat each other like shit after this goes down. It's basically like what do humans do when there's
how
an
do
apocalypse?
They react?
Right.
React.
Yeah.
And it always turns out that the humans like break into these tribes and a bunch of them become super assholes and everyone's like, yeah, you just gotta like kill people to live and you gotta learn how to live with yourself for becoming someone you never thought you'd be, you know, and that kind of shit.
Some of them eat people.
Yeah, you know, there's eating people ones.
Well, let's go through some of the main ones.
Robbing people ones.
We talk about some of the old ones. There's, of course, Walking Dead, which I haven't watched a single episode
of
Walking Dead. I couldn't speak to that.
So
I know it was popular.
So whenever you say that, I always feel like, Patrick, you're saying like you're saying it with a little bit of pride.
Huh? I'm not saying it with pride. I just never, I never got into it. I mean, like I said, I've started this conversation by saying zombies are are not a go-to for me.
Zombies.
But
we may have a situation.
But on the other hand, so like I didn't see Walking Dead. I didn't see World War Z. But I have seen most of the classic movies like Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead. Invasion of the Body Snatchers is
the thriller video.
Is sort of a variation on that. Yes, the thriller video. That counts in my book.
Yeah.
Totally.
I'm a big fan of Last of
Us.
It's
pretty creepy.
At least the television show. I didn't play the video game Last of
video
Us.
Video game's really good too.
But I really like Last of Us. It's about the angle because you're right, Dan. It's always about it's a plot. These creatures, this genre is using a particular plot device as shorthand threat
because
to see how people react.
Yeah,
usually.
Because there's only so much you can do with like monsters eating, like chasing you down the street and eating you, you know?
I mean, you could have them just standing outside a force field, not doing much of anything for a little while.
Yeah,
you could have them do that.
Like, in that episode when they had that fight with the moss monsters, they're moss monsters,
yeah,
right?
They're not the Z word. They're moss monsters.
They're moss monsters. They're not.
Humongous.
That sounds like the Z word.
They're not. So what was the deal? This moss is able to basically.
I didn't understand.
It was.
They said some words. I didn't need to understand. I don't have to understand to get the plot.
So the deal is the moss lives forever, and that's why they're combining it with the crops, because they wanted the crops to live forever. But the thing about the moss is it also happened to consume everything around it. So when you combine that with humans, you get something that doesn't die. Now
that explanation makes more sense to me than what I was able to capture.
Right.
So they
eat everything around them because that's what the moss does. They consume everything around it. So that's the part where they're consuming things. And now, as far as them living forever, what I didn't quite understand the connection is, yes, I get it. The moss lives forever. Therefore, these people live forever. But then why weren't they showing up on their scans if they're technically still alive? I don't know. I didn't quite understand. Like,
I didn't understand.
So, like,
if you
talk about like your classic Z words.
Yeah. Well, that's one reason why I wanted to ask, because there is lore. The whole point of using the Z word. Is it a Z shirt?
Is it a B shirt? Is it a C shirt? Is it a D shirt?
That's a reference to a Tim Robinson sketch on Saturday Night Live.
With
Kevin Hart, and it's very funny.
What kind of shirt is it, man?
You should all look it up. The Z shirt sketch.
Sounds worthwhile.
Is it a B shirt?
It's really stupid in a great way.
Is it a C shirt?
But yeah.
Is it a D shirt?
I brought up the Z word genre because, again, the idea is you use this pre-existing plot tool, archetype. It's effectively an archetype. And you can then rely on the audience to have a basic understanding what's going on. And so you don't need to explain all that so much. And then you can get on with the story. It's another example of one of those things. And then in some cases you might say, okay, I want to do a shift. I want to adjust that a little bit. So 28 days later is the kind of thing where it's like, let's make the Z words all fast. Right. It makes me uncomfortable to say Z words.
I know. It makes me uncomfortable.
Really
yeah, there's something about it that doesn't feel right.
But those things.
You're not trying to eat us.
So you can do that. Right. But it's still relying on the expectations of the audience in order to tell the tale. In the case of 28 Days Later,
the Z words,
the audience expects slow moving
Z words.
Yeah, slow moving Z word.
I understand your discomfort has increased.
What an asshole Spock is. But you know what I'm saying? Where that you still need to have the other stuff about the creatures be similar to the archetype, but you've made them fast and more violent. And that's what you can do. I don't know that they did that in this episode.
So I think there was a conflict here, and the conflict was they want they're using this archetype of like of Z words, of zombies. And the deal with them is that they're the Walking Dead. They're dead.
Yes.
They're dead, but they're still animated moving. This is why their scanners wouldn't detect them. Yeah. Okay? In the classic sense of these things. Yeah. But the problem is that they said the moss lives forever.
Yeah.
And so if you're going by, they want to have their cake and eat it too. They want them to like have the rules of these creatures, but then the reason they stay alive forever, the reason they keep moving is not because they died and are reanimated, is because they have the moss juice in them that makes them live forever.
Headcanon is because they did detect flora.
That's what, yeah. So maybe, fauna.
The moss that's all.
It's the moss is wiggling them around.
It's Weekend at Bernie's moss style.
Whoa.
Wow.
You know, there's a lot of
Weekend at Mossy's.
You know, this has gotten some dangerously close to some Last of Us vibes. Speaking of which, going on because that you know that whole deal is the mushrooms basically.
Yeah, I was going to mention that instead of fungi,
talk about a mycelial network.
Yes, exactly. They already did that on Discovery.
Yeah.
So
what were you saying?
Last of Us is fungi.
Don't call them that.
And on this show, on Strange New Worlds, they decided
finish your thought, Lieutenant,
to go moss, which is interesting. It's not like that interesting. But
it's very Star Trek versus other sort of zombie takes.
Yeah, it was
zombies.
It was a Star Trek zombie.
It's a funny sort of alien
zombies,
alien vegetation zombie.
Zombies.
I don't know. It's a.
Can I stop doing this yet?
No. No.
You're not even trying not to say it, Jesse. At least Patrick's trying
not
to say it.
I had to say it.
You can say those Z words.
Okay, from now on, I'm going to say the Z word.
Or we'll just forget about when we come back from break.
Call them bibbies. Bibbies.
Bombies.
Bibbies. I'm going to call them bibbies. That's my new word for zombies.
Zombies?
Bibbies. I'm going to call them bibbies.
Isn't there a clip of somebody saying the Z word?
That sounds like the Z word.
Yeah.
I played that already a few times as well.
Well, you could play it every time we say Z word.
I don't, but that doesn't solve the problem.
It actually makes the problem significantly more problematic. I'm trying to think. So we did. There's
don't hurt yourself.
28 Days Later, World War Z. I never saw that. I just remember the previews.
There was one called with what's his name, Bilbo Baggins, called
Bilbo.
It was called Cargo. There's one called Cargo that has Bilbo Baggins.
Oh yeah. Well, these are all things I saw the preview for. But
that was pretty good.
Watch.
There's one with Carrie Ann Moss and some guy. I forget what that's called, but then there's this other one.
It's like you remember that?
I remember watching it. Yeah, that's Carrie Ann Moss. Think of her in a Bibby movie.
Bibby?
Bibby? So I mean, I know that like Bibby movies are like, you know, it's kind of derivative at this point. It's like they're all the rage. Everyone loves them. They're so great. Like vampires are so passé. Now it's all about the Bibby. So like
that's pretty passé.
So, but I usually always get enjoyment from them. Like I've seen all of Walking Dead, and much of The Walking Dead is terrible. But I always manage to find at least some enjoyment from the episodes, even like the awful ones. I was still just like, I like these characters, and I like looking at monsters.
There are a lot of great actors on there, like Sonequa Martin Green was on there.
And then they did some spin-offs with some of those characters. And those are really pretty good. They did one with the guy who plays Daryl, who's in the Boondock Saints, and he's also in that game, Death Stranding. I forget his name now. But anyway, they did a spinoff one where he was in Europe, and that was kind of cool because I think it was done by like European, like
were the European zombies more? Sorry, were they more
European
snooty?
Bibbies?
Were they snooty? Snooty,
yeah,
snooty zombies, snooty bibbies?
Did they
snooty
smoke bibby. More cigarettes?
Yeah,
zombies.
Were in Europe when they were fighting the bibbies in Europe? Were the bibbies like smoking a cigarette and they like wouldn't come after you because they weren't done with their cigarette yet?
Were they like standing?
But
on
you
the
couldn't
sidewalk,
fire them. Like
beer.
They couldn't get fired. It's just like
the way you got them to like not notice you and not get at you is you speak English at them and then they wouldn't pay attention to you. Then they would turn their nose up and they'd be like, I'm not gonna pay attention to this. No, I was just gonna say the whole cast and the director, I think they were all European, so it had this kind of European vibe to it. Anyway, it's cool. One show I did not get into, I tried to get into Fear the Walking Dead, and I got through about a season of that, and I just couldn't get into that show.
You just
and
weren't able to. I just wasn't fear. You weren't scared of it.
I would. Yeah, the fear wasn't there, I guess. But
it seems
I'm into Bibby stuff.
The Bibby movies, they start out. It's a little more lighter and more playful, perhaps some of it, and then it gets say like Walking Dead and the Last of Us. The Bibby shit is a lot more like apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic. The world has really crumbled because of the Bibbies,
which is more realistic. Certainly
28 like, days later it seems thing. A little more hopeful with the Bibbies. The dawn of the Bibby shit, like there's still some other stuff going on, and they get rescued or something.
But I haven't seen 28 Years Later, but 28 Weeks Later has a pretty disturbing opening.
Oh, I actually didn't see that.
One opening is kind of upsetting, actually.
I just saw the first one.
Yeah, I haven't gotten all the way through 28 Weeks
like
Later.
Like 28 years ago or something.
Yeah, but I thought it was interesting. So, I mean, okay, first of all, I just want to say that I enjoyed this episode.
Yeah,
I thought this was just a really entertaining episode. I liked that there was a nice, there was a balance. balance between dialogue and action. Maybe some of the... Okay, now, if you weren't into... I understand if people weren't into the whole sort of Bibby scene where, like, they get... Where the Klingon's on the ground and they get swarmed by all those monsters and they're chewing them up. Like, I can understand how some people might be like, come on, that's, like, a bit much, you know?
I was down with it.
I was
just like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, I was cool with it. I can understand how someone might be like, that doesn't feel Star Trek at all. Or I could understand if someone felt that. I didn't feel that way. I thought the action with them shooting at the Klingons and the Klingons shooting back, like, they didn't turn it into some, like, 10-minute-long action scene.
Yeah.
It was only a few minutes of...
And there was contrast with, like, the bridge scenes, how they would cut with, like, and there'd be people chilling on the bridge doing bridge stuff.
So,
and then, like...
Yeah, so they definitely... I feel like they put more effort into putting more dialogue into this episode than maybe some other action focused episodes in the past. So I thought there was a good balance of that kind of stuff,
which
going
I think
on.
Has been true of this season so far. Restrained editing, like we were talking about in the Hegemony Part 2, that scene with the Gorn running at the camera, where they let it just keep running towards the camera instead of like cutting away a billion times.
More like Strange New Behavior.
We do need to take a break, and when we get back, I will provide my thoughts on this.
Why?
Your Strange New Behavior.
All right, we'll be right back.
In a minute!
And we're back.
But unfortunately, it's returned.
Now comes the fun part.
Here it comes.
I love how apt the sounds are. The sound clips. Very apt.
Very apt.
Well done, Dan.
Not inapt.
You know what? You really put in a lot of effort on all this kind of stuff.
Thank you.
Getting all those clips together. And I just want to say thanks, Dan.
When's the other shoe going to drop here?
No, that's it, man.
I think he's being sincere. I get the impression he's being sincere.
You know, I don't...
What are you doing?
I don't...
Keep doing...
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yes, this episode. I also like this episode. I hope nobody was waiting on tenterhooks for me saying I dislike this episode. I will say I have some not insignificant critiques of this episode, but it goes... in my book to show the strength of the episode that I still enjoy the episode despite some of my critique.
This might be an impossible comparison, but what do you guys think of this episode versus Trelane is Q episode?
The Wedding Bell Blues?
Wedding Bell Blues.
I probably would lean more towards Wedding Bell Blues.
Yeah, I like that one.
Because I was sort of delighted and it was fun.
I think I like this one better.
Well, you like zombies.
Well, I'm...
Zombies.
You like the bibbies.
I like the bibbies. But that's not even just why. Like, even without the bibbies. Like, if anything, I thought
even
the bibbies...
without the bibbies?
I thought the bibby scenes were pushing it a little bit, but I was still okay with them.
Yeah. What? So there was
it was
other
definitely
scenes?
Pushing it.
You like the other scenes?
I like the whole idea of like, you know, Batel has this, you know, like so they dissolved. Remember when they dissolved Gorn babies into her body? Yes. Remember
she
when
got
that
all,
happened?
She got all Gorny.
She got all Gorny.
Gorny.
Well, like I remember Spock.
I'm Gorny.
I mean, last episode Spock was literally talking about dissolving the Gorn into her body. So they dissolved the Gorn into her body. Now they have to get this flower to like hybridize her with the Gorn, and I'm not sure why. The only thing I can think
it's
is
the
that
magic plant.
Wait. Almost done with my sentence. I was saying I can only think it's because the reason they have to hybridize her with the Gorn is because for whatever reason her body is rejecting the Gorn DNA, and so if she hybridizes with the Gorn, her body will then accept the DNA.
Yeah, man.
That's all I can think. You know how your body rejects things and kills you?
It's a little mad.
You know,
science,
sometimes your body's stupid and rejects things it shouldn't, and it ends up killing itself by trying to reject something even though you're A-okay. That's kind of the situation she's in with the Gorn, I think. That's what I think.
Yeah.
But you, Patrick, you were saying something about because the magic flower MacGuffin, is that what you were going
to
say?
Just to clarify, I don't think Dan is intending to shame people with autoimmune disorders.
What?
Because you're like, when the body attacks you because it's stupid.
he's not shaming.
I'm not shaming anyone.
I know what you mean.
No,
he's just saying that
it's
stupid.
It just sounded funny because it's like a dumb body.
Well, I mean, like, it's like when somebody gets an implant and it's like fine, but your body decides it's a foreign object, so it like tries to reject it and it can't because the body isn't always smart.
I agree. I understand what you're saying. Yeah,
I know about immune disorders. I do. Yeah, I've got colitis. Like that's an immune. Now I gave everyone my medical. And thanks, Patrick. Thank you for getting me to reveal my my real personal medical information. Everybody out there, I have colitis.
I have ulcerative colitis. I have an astigmatism.
Because you called me out and you made it seem like I was shaming people with autoimmune disorders, and I have one. So I can't shame it because I have it. I win.
I am Bytha.
Okay, great. And that sort of personal information will help endear you to our audience. It enhances the connection between the listeners and
one
the
of my arms is longer than the other. Look.
See, that's Jesse is it too.
I like Dan's like, I've got like poop problems, and Jesse's like, I've got an astigmatism, which is super common, so do I, and I have one arm that's longer than the other, which I think is true of everybody.
I was just holding it funny to see if Dan was looking at it. He wasn't even looking.
It's a shame what happened here.
So the thing with this...
this can't ever happen again.
Never do that again.
With the Gorney business was actually one of my critiques of the episode, in that I do think it was a little bit of a bait and switch to have Battelle be all healthy in the last episode, yeah, because the last episode was all meant to be fun. You didn't want to drag people down. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, oh... rug pull moment. Now, nothing wrong with that.
They just didn't know it at first.
Look, I agree.
The Gorn is vicious, man.
Look, there's nothing implausible about that or whatever, but sort of emotionally, it's a little bit manipulative. And I think there's been a lot of that kind of shortcutting this season where...
it's only three episodes into the season.
Yeah, but I think particularly in Hegemony
and
Part
really,
2...
And really, Hegemony Part 2 doesn't truly count as a third season episode, because they don't really begin the next season until the second episode.
It does, because my critique of that episode was it felt very Part Two-ish, mm-hmm, in that it was, they were just like, oh shit, we got to come up with some resolution to this corner we wrote ourselves into.
You are wrong.
And it's not uncommon. It's not uncommon for Part Two episodes to be a little bit cobbled together. Mm-hmm. So I was more forgiving of it there. I think in the last two episodes, in Wedding Bell Blues and in this one, in the Shuttle to Confori, they take a few of these shortcuts that I don't know. It's fine, because it still ends up being entertaining and all that, but I just felt like, okay, well, now she's...
Don't overthink it.
And then the other thing is, well, yeah, I agree. That's good advice. The other thing is like, now I'm curious...
Snap out of it!
Where is this going to go? Is she going to turn into
a weird Gorn creature?
I don't
think they're going to do it. I think if you're talking about cutting corners, I think if they cut corners, they'll cop out on that. She's not going to turn into a Gorn creature. But that would be awesome if she kind of did.
Well, there's an idea floating around out there that this is what's going to lead to the arena-style Gorn from TOS, because the arena-style Gorn that Kirk fought was more humanoid,
right,
and less like lizard monster crazy.
And they're all like slow and goofy.
Oh. So I don't know. Oh. That idea seems kind of crazy.
That would be crazy.
I don't know if it's crazy, great idea crazy, or really stupid and annoying crazy.
Kind of crazy.
It's been posited out there. On the internet. That's not something I came up
it's
with.
Positively it's positively crazy.
Something I saw a few places reported as suggested. So
this doesn't change a thing.
We'll see where that goes. But other than that, like the actual plot, the storyline is interesting. It is really, in terms of character development, seeing how it affects her relationship with Pike,
yeah,
and how she's dealing with it herself. I thought it was brilliantly
portrayed.
I thought
that was great at the end when like Pike was all like, well, then I wouldn't get a chance to comfort you, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, she's like, it's not about you, man. I'm the one who's going through this shit, you know? And he's understandably worried about her, and I can understand both their point of views, but ultimately she had the better point of view, you know, of just like, I don't need to tell you shit. This is my life.
It's kind of cool that there's like a forbidden world on like the border, like, and there's like a warning that's like, don't go here.
And presumably the Klingons were...
It's like some post-war shit.
Were we supposed to understand that warning was to warn us about the Z-words?
The babies?
The babies, man.
Because they were all confused as to why that beacon was there. It wasn't supposed to be there. So my assumption is that it was placed there by somebody who had dealt with this zombie business.
Because Omega was like, there was...
No, that sends the wrong message.
There was like a mine that was,
and
like,
they called it a mine.
Sort of like, you know, quarantined or whatever, so you couldn't go there. And they had a similar kind of beacon there, so maybe it's the same. Seemed like the same kind of deal for me.
But they didn't necessarily know what was down there.
They didn't know what was down
there. Our understanding from the Klingon crew that was there was that people knew that anyone who went down to the planet didn't come back. Mm-hmm. Which remained largely
Klingons
true.
Like to keep the mystery up. It's like, just don't go there, man. No, we can't talk about it. No.
But That so
it could have been a bunch of tribbles down there.
Yeah, and when that was another critique I had of this episode.
It's aggressive.
Was that, and again, it's a critique that's overcome by the fact that it still ended up being fun and entertaining. It's just layering sort of implausibility on implausibility, or putting hats on hats in terms of plot terms. Because they've already reset Batel. Like, that's the first thing that we have to deal with is, like, Batel was okay. No,
she
now
got
turns
a
out turns out not only she, no, let me finish, because I'm making a long point here, Dan. I'm making a point that has multiple layers.
Enough.
And so I have to lead up to this. You'll be familiar with
it. I don't know.
So one point one is they've gone back on this Batel being okay thing, and now she's not only not okay, but within days she's going to be dead, right? So ticking clock, horrible things are going to happen to the captain's girlfriend, all right? So, okay, fine. We are now accepting that. We've been manipulated into this. Okay, that's going to be the plot for this episode. So now the captain has motivation to go on a potentially dangerous mission to find this secret plant MacGuffin, all right? Cool. That's the plot. And then now there's going to be zombies. Okay, cool. That's the complication to that.
Zombies?
To that plot. There you go. Now you have a complete story. You have motivation for going on an adventure, and then you have a complicating factor on the adventure, and then they have to resolve the complicating factor and come home with the magic plant
He took with him, like, a badass dude who doesn't get caught.
Yeah.
He was like, I got to take this guy.
Here's the deal.
What is that deal with him not getting caught?
I don't know,
but it was badass.
Well, we'll get to that too. Here's the deal. My critique is, and then they introduce, in addition to the zombies, there's also Klingons. Oh,
zombies.
And not only is it Klingons, they're not just Klingons who happen to be patrolling the area and wondering, like, why is the Federation breaking the treaty, which would also be another complication. It's still a hat on a hat. It's still an extra complication, but it's like, okay, that's a complication that makes sense. But now it's like, in fact,
it's
a Klingon lady who's been hunting Dr. Mbenga because she gave him a tracking, like, somewhere maybe on the starbase.
Some blood feud.
He took some drink where he ate an olive.
Klingon blood feud.
That had, like, a tracking thing in it. So now it's a Klingon blood feud on top of it, right? So that's what I'm saying is, like, it's like the zombies are the first complication. The Klingons are the second complication. And then the fact that the Klingons
are there for
this specific dude is another complication. And again, my as I preface this all with, I don't care in the end, because I still enjoyed how it all played out, because it was fun. It was interesting. There was some good character development. We got to see brilliant acting from all the characters. So it was worth it in the end, but I couldn't not point out that there's just, like, this series of layers of things. And what's more forgivable in a part two season opener, I think, becomes a little less forgivable, or at least more noticeable as the season continues.
Okay, I mean, that's okay.
But I still really enjoyed the episode, so don't get too mad at
me.
Fair point.
Dan looks very angry at me.
Fair point.
I'm not angry. I'm just pointing out that you make a good point. No, it's like, okay, so yeah, I understand that you were talking about emotional manipulation with the whole Batel, like, is all better and now she's not better anymore. I mean, that didn't really bother me because, like, you know, she's got this new shit in her, and yes, more complications can arise from medical shit after it happens. You know, it's not too far-fetched
None of it is far-fetched.
And now I guess, like, the whole, I thought it was interesting. It was in a particular, like, and of course, classic Klingon fashion. Like, she wasn't, like, avenging her father's death, as everyone thought. She was mad because he killed her before she got to.
Yeah, and I like that. That was great.
That was funny. And
it was undermining the or subverting the expectation.
Right. And you know, it's kind of fucked up though that, like, first of all, he handily beat her in combat. That was like no match at all. But like, he wasn't really respecting her culture by not killing her, because, like, she was as she said,
you damn me to a fate worse than death.
Like, he should have killed her because, like, that would have like made her happier. That's like respecting the Klingon's culture. But as it stands, like, he's forcing her to.
I don't think he had any respect for the Klingons.
Well,
that could be the angle.
I mean, not really.
I mean, like, not I mean, any. Like, he wasn't like their whole thing about, like, killing people just to get honor. He wasn't gonna play that game.
I mean, the human thing is, Starfleet people, Federation people often don't play that game. Yeah. You know, Starfleet is they're often just like, fuck that.
And
like,
Benga don't,
like,
play that.
Like with Riker and Worf, when Worf wanted to kill himself, Riker was like, that's stupid. And so it's like,
Riker's like, your culture's stupid.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's like the merciful thing to do would have been to kill her. But anyway, she got hers anyways.
And Mbenga, he's a doctor, first of all, and he's mentioned before his whole, like, he's too good at killing, and so he doesn't want to do it. It's like almost like he's addicted to it.
Mbenga's an interesting character because he's
like killing.
Because he's super duper chill, except when he's not. He's like a badass.
Yeah, and then,
that's also why you always be careful around the chill people. Yeah. They're the ones who, when they flip out, they flip the fuck out.
But then it made me wonder. It's like he's been through like three marriages and an annulment, which is like no judgment on anyone's that's been through that. But they made a comment of it in the episode. They pointed like that, to that. Yeah. So like. It's just interesting because it's like he seems like such a chill guy, but like that maybe it's the kind of thing where he's too chill and like he feels that like maybe he doesn't care enough about people
you know
or something.
What my guess
I don't
is?
Know.
I don't think that guy.
Or maybe
all
he doesn't get. Maybe he. Maybe he doesn't get. Maybe he either he doesn't like get worked up when he's supposed to, and he just seems like indifferent, or maybe he just like freaks out every once in a while.
I think Jesse's right. I think probably he's not chill.
He's kind
of I think the order of events is he was so not chill that it came to a point where his body and brain was like, I have to become chill or I'm going to be dead.
Right.
And so his chillness is the new thing.
I'm going to kill a bunch and of that, Klingons.
It is time for one of us to die.
Yeah. So that I think that's probably the angle with
I but, killed with so many Klingons, I don't know which house is which.
So
yeah. That's a fucked up fucking badass
he just
thing
said it like he wasn't bragging. He was just like, I don't know who you are because I've killed so many Klingons.
His delivery
I had to kill them.
His delivery was amazing. And again, that's what makes me enjoy this episode, even though I have these little aggravations, plot wise, structure wise, is so good.
It would have been pretty fucked up for Pike to turn him in, because that's what he was worried about, that Pike was gonna turn him in. It's like what? You mean on like the mission that we were on?
Just murdered Pike. Do you think he was asking me? He was like, I don't want to have to murder you.
I'm just saying that because like they weren't supposed to be on that mission in the first place. Yeah. If Pike turned him in and Banga could just be like, well, I'll turn you in, you know, into mush.
Wouldn't it be funny if he was like, well, I'll just turn you in, asshole.
You're right. If Pike was like, I'm going to turn you in. He's like, no, you're not. And they had to, was a mutual destruction thing. They were just like, okay, we won't do it. Because that's how it should have ended, if, with both of them angry at each other and been like, ugh.
Mutually assured destruction.
That's right. Yeah. No, you're talking about like, so you also had a problem with how the Klingons just so happened to find them.
Yeah.
Like, we know that Bytho was looking for them.
We learn that she had put a tracking device.
Right. You're just saying that it's kind of coincidental that she happened to find them right during the time that they got to this planet.
It's just adding stuff to an already pretty full story. And again, it turned out great. It turned out very interesting and entertaining and afforded opportunities for character development. So in that sense, totally worth it.
The only issue I had with the Bibbies is that they didn't really add much drama. They just kind of were there. Yeah.
And they were only there when they needed to be there. They were very plotty.
Yeah.
Because that's why I was joking earlier in the episode when they put up the force field and then the zombies are just sort of milling about for a while.
Right. Like, there was never really that. Never that much of a threat that they were going to get him. Because, like, I do get that, like, it's like, are we supposed to be scared of the Klingons? Are we supposed to be scared of the Bibbies? But it's like, it turns out, like, you were kind of a little bit scared of both. Not that scared too much. Not too scared of either, because like he kicked her ass, and the Bibbies were held back pretty good. Now, I like that the fight scene. It reminded me of like a pit fighting movie, like Kickboxer or Lionheart or something, where it's like you have two fighters
with
in the ring.
Mbenga fighting. What was the Klingon's
Bytho?
Name? Bytho. Yeah.
Bytho.
Yeah.
I am Bytho,
and I really
daughter of Dakra.
I really
champion of House Ra'ul.
Sorry, Bytho. I forgot about how long that was. I enjoyed her portrayal. And the teeth were awesome.
So it was like Mbenga was Jean-Claude Van Damme, and then Bytho was Tong Po, and then like all the drunken onlookers, onlookers, like it was like wanting to see a fight. Those were the Bibbies around the side. That's what that. It was just like kickboxer.
Another one of my. Admittedly, fairly minor, but present critiques is the direction of some of the zombie stuff. It was sort of inconsistent. There were some things that were pretty badass, you know, when they were attacking and like you said, surrounding the Klingon and nibbling on his body. When they were like,
they did that to her too.
She stomps on like the head of the
zombies.
When she shoots both the zombie and her Klingon buddy and they both get vaporized.
Zombies.
There were a few things that were great, but then there was a lot of other zombie stuff. I'm sorry.
Zombies.
Sorry about that. That I think this is somewhat unfair because it's comparing it to like The Last of Us, which has done this really well. That when you watch a show like The Last of Us, I can't speak to The Walking Dead, etc., but The Last of Us, really, there's moments of true excellent tension with the zombies. With the bibbies. But the in babies. This episode, it was just sort of like, okay, like boom, boom. And then the zombies like run in and then they kind of stop.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There wasn't that much.
They're part of the environment.
Sometimes they're milling around.
I let's just say I didn't fear The Walking Dead in this situation.
Sometimes they were fast. Sometimes they were slow.
The effects were mostly pretty cool. Like, for example, when the Klingon, I liked the shot when the Klingon found their shuttle and they were like, I guess they found us. Yeah. But like right before the Klingon, like it shoots the ship.
Blows up the shuttle.
I thought that was a pretty cool special effect.
Oh, it was great.
It looked cool.
But when they blew up the bibbies, like that blood looked pretty goofy. Yeah. Like that bright red. It looked like some like.
I mean, it was CGI.
Yeah, but like okay, you can see. Okay, what they do now is they do instead of showing blood splat, like when someone gets shot with a bullet, instead of seeing a little splatter of blood, it'll be CGI, and you can tell that the little tiny splatter of blood is CGI, and you can tell, and it doesn't look that great. This looked worse because it was a big neon blob of goopy goo mist, and I was surprised at how terrible the exploding baby's blood looked.
And some of the scenes were quite dark, and normally that's not something I complain about, but there was a few things where I couldn't necessarily tell exactly what was going on, but minor thing there, because there was some pretty good stuff in terms of the action, and the production design overall was really good. And I got the vibe, I got a sort of a old school, particularly like TNG Deep Space Nine vibe when they were walking around on this planet, but like upgraded to 4K, because I presume they're shooting this in the virtual reality thing that they use. And that a lot of those plants, they do that thing where they have a bunch of potted plants and fake rocks. And then behind them is all this beautiful scenery. Right. So it looks really cool, but there's still that vibe that they're just walking past them like plastic plants. But like, it looks good. I liked it. I thought that was kind of cool.
It looked cool, yeah.
Because sometimes it almost looks too good and it looks less Star Trek-y. So I enjoyed that they were like going to this cool jungle planet.
Or it looked like Voyager or something.
Yeah. And this was kind of like a Jurassic Park kind of vibe where like going into like Isla Nublar after many years and they're in the research station and there's going to be a dinosaur around the corner. Oh no, it's not a dinosaur. It's a moss monster.
Yeah.
Moss monster.
Moss monster.
Moss monster. Moss monster. Well, I thought interesting part of the episode is what we haven't talked about yet is I think it's interesting what they're, you know, the whole Ortega sort of situation going through, because I think like Ortega's has always been kind of a smart alecky kind of like back talker, but it's always been kind of fun and it's always been kind of in a fun way, but she's always had that part of her where she's like, you know, she's I don't know what the right word is, but she's
a maverick.
Like when she has these quips and she talks back in a fun, silly way, but now it's a kind of turning a little sparky. There you go. She's sparky.
Now it's turning a little dark.
I actually have a list of her disobediences in episode.
We're going to get to that list in a second, but I'm going to ask, do you recall what I mentioned last week was my concern towards the end of the episode, my concern with this Ortega's situation. Do you recall?
You were talking about her trauma thing you thought would have been played out.
I was nervous, and I said, because at the end of last week's episode of Wedding Bell Blues, we see Ortega's clearly worried about her situation, or having some flashbacks to her situation with the Gorn, right? Mm-hmm. She had this hugely traumatic experience that she has obviously not gotten over, right? And so last week I was just noting concern that it depended on which direction they went with this, because stories about people overcoming or dealing with trauma are important, but Star Trek's also done it a lot, and a lot of other shows have done it a lot, and sometimes they don't do it great, or sometimes it's just like
done it a lot,
turns into like trauma porn or something, and it can just be a lot. That made me a little nervous. This episode reveals a little bit more about the direction they're taking it, and I really enjoyed it. I really thought that it was sort of like she was acting out of character, but in an in-character way, right? It seemed
like
it seemed like a plausible response that this character of Ortega's that Melissa Navi has crafted and the writers have crafted over the past few seasons. It seemed like a plausible way she would respond to trauma is with this insubordination, with this wanting to rescue somebody, because she was just recently in a situation where she needed to be rescued and time was of the essence. And now she's like, she's on the other side of that.
And like I said, you can argue that she's never been really insubordinate in the past, but you can argue that some of like her back talk is cheeky. There you go. She's always been cheeky. And so you could argue that like if she didn't have such a good nature about it, you could argue that like if she said some of the things she said in the first and second season with a nastier tone, it would have been insubordination. Yeah. But because her tone was Happy Ortega's tone, it was like, oh, she's just being cheeky. And so
Tom Paris-ish.
And so really it's taking how she already was and kind of just making it darker. Yeah. And plus, like you said, it's springboarding off of like a situation she's dealt with personally. When she was like, I know how like 6 hours is a long time, you know, and then when it's like, yeah, I know you had to deal with that shit too, you know, and that kind of thing. So,
and what's great about it is it's excellent. And so far anyway, who knows, they could go in some other direction, but what they did this episode was interesting. It fit the character, but it also gave opportunities for interesting character moments and development with other characters. Particularly her and Uhura had a bit of an initial, like a little spat, because she was bitter at Uhura backing her up.
Well, but Uhura was just doing her job.
Exactly.
Like, what was she supposed to say?
Exactly.
Like, I heard something that I actually didn't hear. Yeah. Like, she expected her to lie to her superior officer to back her up, which is, you know.
And then, of course, Una is having to deal with this from a sort of a managerial perspective, with full understanding and sympathy of what Ortega's went through, but also Una's responsibility, of course, is to the ship. And
this can't ever happen again.
Really, really cool stuff, and curious to see where they go. Again, I always remain nervous that like, when they have these plot threads, I like seeing this stuff, but it's also like, how much do they balance it against other stories, and how long does it go?
And that's one of the things, what I was talking about before with, I thought this had a good balance, is there wasn't too much action. They didn't go over the top with action. There was just enough. Yeah. And that whole scene, the whole situation on Kenforey, they balanced it well with the whole Ortega situation, you know? And so like, I think that what made it good is that the balance was good between the different stuff, and there was enough to make you think about things and just care about characters. And I don't know, I don't know if people think this is dumb, but I'm really curious what happens with Patel's, like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care if it's a silly reason. I really want to know what happens if they
it might be silly.
I think so much of that is because a combination of the writing and the portrayal by these actors. They have such brilliant actors playing all of these roles, and that's often where Star Trek excels, is that they even in the smaller roles they get these really great people. You care about what happens to Batel, right? Like, this character's only been on a few times, and you really care about what happens to this person. And
it doesn't matter.
You care enough that you can sympathize with her, even though our hero, Captain Pike, you know, you can be like, hey, you know what, Pike, I think you're wrong about this. Which is great, because these are strong characters. They're well written and well portrayed. Mm. I'm beating a dead horse at this stage.
Don't beat horses.
It's all right. Not too much.
Did you want to do your list, or should we save it for when we get back from the break?
I mean, it's a 9-point list.
It's a nine point list. We can take a break. We'll take a break.
Already?
Take a break.
Yeah. No, it's fine, because we went a little longer on the
take
first break.
Take a break.
So, did we?
Oh, yeah. I keep track of this all in my brains. So, and plus, it always takes us a little while to actually get to the break.
A little while.
You know. It's been a while.
It's a little while.
So, since Zombies. It has been a while since we did our last break, we'll take a break in a minute. See?
This feels official.
We'll take a break in a minute. And then when we get back from that break, we will conclude our discussion of...
Zombies?
You just see, Jesse's doing it. He does this on purpose. And then later he's I don't know. I just wasn't paying attention.
It's like when Ronald Reagan was asked about Iran. He said he just didn't recall.
There's a problem with my brain, sir. Yeah.
Chief O'Brien!
But yeah, we'll conclude our discussion. There's going to be one of Dan's lists. I don't know if we have any duty or no duties.
We do.
Oh, we have a duty or no duty. So there's a Dan's list. There's a duty or no duty. There's a couple more critiques on my part to conclude the episode.
This human is full of words.
And so we'll be
getting close to that break.
We'll be right back.
Going back is not an option.
Go back or die.
Let's go.
And we're back.
This is as good a place as any to hold up.
Indeed it is. Okay, so we're back, and that means we can get right to Dan's 9-point list.
Now it's time for <fuck I'm> going.
Okay. All right. To the list, sir.
Ah, walked right into that one.
Yes, indeed.
Wasn't that a weird, like, that was a weird slapsticky moment where he's like, what? He got, I can't even remember what hit him. He got, like, shot in the leg or beat in the leg.
She, like, stabbed him.
She stabbed him. Yeah, he's like, oh, walked right into that one. It was, like, a weird moment of slapstick that wasn't like, oh, by the way, I want to mention that I liked her weapon setup. She had like a chain whip, like right out of Castlevania.
Yeah. It was just out of the blue, she just whipped that out.
Yeah, that's what you have, Simon.
She's like, shit's getting real, so I'm going to pull out the chain whip.
Whether you're Simon or Trevor or Richter Belmont, you have a chain whip thing. And I love it when, like, I also like it when, like, that when they're one, when one arm you're wielding a melee weapon and the other hand you're wielding like a ballistic weapon or like a gunny shooty
like
weapon.
Laser, yeah, that's laser, where it's laser at, weapon. Man. Disruptor, like, in this case.
Yeah, so.
Two-handed combat.
Yeah, how do you, if you're right-handed, which do you wield in which hand?
I have a better question for you. What if you're left-handed?
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, I'm left-handed.
I know.
So we're giving personal. So Jesse has astigmatism, you have colitis, and I'm left-handed.
Yeah.
And now the audience is ingratiated to us, or we've ingratiated ourselves.
I got tinnitus.
Various segments of the audience.
Wow. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think that's true.
So I think that's true because when you tell the audience about you, that it feels like they feel like they get to know you.
Yeah,
that's why you got to reveal something personal about yourself in order to make a connection with you. You have to be relatable is the key.
Jesse, he's just like reiterating what I said earlier.
Sounds like it.
All right,
of course he takes your side.
Horror.
No. No.
Third break, Jesse. He's just chowing down on some chips. Yeah.
Popcorn.
Oh, popcorn. I'm so sorry.
One wrong step and you both die.
Oh, shit. It's popcorn from a bag.
Okay. Better not risk it.
List. There's a list. A 9-point list.
Give us this fucking list all the time.
Do you wield a melee weapon or a gun weapon in your dominant hand?
Gun weapon. That's a good question.
Melee weapon.
Probably a
dominant
melee
hand
weapon.
Because the gun weapon is easier to use.
Right. But you need more skill.
In my case, I'm also
like a sword, right?
I'm right-eyed, so when I fire a weapon, I actually do. I play baseball. I hit a baseball bat. I play golf right-handed, and I shoot weapons right-handed though I'm left-handed, I am right-eyed.
Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah.
So in my case,
do you play when you were playing bass? Did you play left-handed bass or did you?
No, I played right-handed bass. Yeah, like, but I don't know. Maybe I should have played left-handed bass.
Well, lots of left-handed people play right-handed. Yeah, like, you're not. It's left-handed is kind of a made-up way.
But the thing is the left hand. I actually liked having the dexterity of my left hand on the frets. Right. I don't know.
Right.
I thought that was actually helpful.
Exactly. Because that makes more sense.
Plucking at the strings. Sucking on a chili dog, plucking on a bass strings didn't require all that much dexterity. Right. Not for the bass lines I was playing.
It
at
wasn't
the time.
Like you were.
I seem to have temporarily lost control.
I never meant to do that.
Yeah, we didn't mention that Scott just like kicked the shit out of that new ensign, that really nice ensign, who we don't hear from the rest of the episode. Like, he might have a horrible internal bleeding.
Oh,
injuries.
Yeah, I thought it was like a little fucked up that they didn't seem that concerned about him.
Spock didn't let go. Nobody went over to help him. Spock didn't apologize. Well, Spock just kicked the shit out of him.
He did this.
My apologies, ensign.
Like, on his way out. Yeah, he's like, right. But like, at the time
he was
it
all
happened.
Screaming,
but
like,
oh, you mean. I think it's like, well, the thing is they weren't like, he punched him in the chest so hard he flew back about 15 feet and they were, no one ran over to him. No one ran over to him. It wasn't until like after that shit was settled with Batel and Spock, that's when like he kind of like got up and they were like, oh yeah, I guess you're okay, fine. Like, you don't just get punched across the, like, he fucking probably collapsed his lungs or
something. Collapsed lung, broken ribs, and internal bleeding.
Well, Spock is a strong dude.
He is a strong fella.
We may have a situation.
Okay.
All right.
The list is called Ortega's Disobedience.
Okay.
Number one, it just begins, not quite with disobedience, but Ortega says, been a long time since I've flown into disputed Klingon territory. And Una says, around disputed territory, Enterprise will not cross that line. So she hasn't disobeyed yet, but she's already like talking about like, yeah, we're going to go in.
She's thinking ahead.
She's thinking ahead.
She's like, this is going
to
happen.
And Una's already has to be like, remember, we're not doing that. So it's sort of beginning. Number two, Ortega's was the reason they found the Klingons. Remember, because like they were hiding behind that EM pulse or whatever. Yeah. And she was like, wait, scan, do a double scan, which is pretty smooth on her part. Then Una was like, well, that doesn't change anything. And like after she says that they find out they're the Klingons, and Ortega's almost cuts Una off saying it's a pretty big coincidence that they showed up now. What if they spotted the shuttle? Right, she's still okay, but like she barely let Una finish the doesn't change anything sentence before she jumped in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Una suggests that the Klingons could have just been scavengers, and she doesn't want to assume causation.
Yeah.
And then this clearly annoys Ortega, yeah. As you can see her on her face. Number three, when
and real quick, that's the kind of thing we've certainly seen that situation play out many times in Star Trek before, mm-hmm. and. I liked how, and your list is illustrating this very well, how the insubordinations increased in severity, mm-hmm. right? It built up and it started sort of in character-ish, but then drifting more and more to be like, oh, she's acting a little bit off.
Yeah, and it began almost like
you get away with
it. It began like after the first one, if they didn't sort of ramp it up, you would have never even noticed that she was being insubordinate. It's just, but you could tell after the fact that's where it started.
I hate to assume causation where there isn't any.
Yeah. And by the way, I 100% agree with Una from mm-hmm. a strategic standpoint.
Show off.
You can't. Well, you know, you oughtn't make too many assumptions, especially with limited information, and take into account your own strategic biases. In Ortega's case, if she was thinking more clearly, she'd understand. Okay, my instinct is to say let's go fuck some shit up. That means I should pay special attention to reasons we shouldn't before I really firmly take that position.
Because as you know,
one wrong step and you both die.
That's what happens. Yeah. Both of you. Not me, though. Just you two.
Yeah. You mean Bytha? Or Bofa?
Not Bofa. Not from under.
Not Bofa.
Bythades?
Oh, when we were getting Spock vision after he did the...
You're not a monster,
whoops,
Joseph.
That's the wrong line. Sorry.
Just a man.
Monster.
And my friend.
Are we going to save that for later?
No, I actually didn't have a planned place on playing it doesn't hurt anything. When he does the whole...
My mind to your mind. One breath between us.
And he went into like Spock vision. Like, I guess they were seeing... That was Gorn vision or something. Like, he was seeing the... was that Gorn vision he was seeing when he punched... punched Gamble? Yeah. That was, like, Gorn vision.
Or
he
was it
the
Predator vision?
Star Trek does seem to have a lot of horror movies sort of influences. Because, like, they've got the Bibbies, right?
Uh-huh.
They have Aliens, remember? Because there was the whole... The Gorn also has an Aliens influence. And then, of course, Pumpkinhead.
Pumpkinhead.
And so now it's Predator. So all the horror movie tropes surround the Gorn. We've got Bibbies, Aliens, Pumpkinhead, mm-hmm. and Predator now.
And they still remain very one-dimensional so far.
Yeah, I know.
Sort of disappointingly so.
Right,
now, we said in our discussion of Hegemony Part 2 that, who knows, maybe by the end of the season they add more to the Gorn lore. Maybe they've closed off
Gorn lore,
and they're not
Gorn
you know,
lore.
Not
I
doing,
am Gorn lore.
Not doing
Gorn
any
lore.
More Gorn stuff other than the Captain Patel's disease hybridization. However, that's going to turn out. She's going to be like slightly green and just get a long nose.
Next week they'll just completely
nose.
Forget about
Maybe
it.
Maybe she'll look like the Wicked Witch of the West or something.
Could be.
Yeah, could be.
Could be. All right.
Number three, when Spock recommends the slow approach, she non-tactfully says, "That won't work for me."
Mm-hmm. Remember when she said me. That was the weird thing. That won't work for me.
I know. It kind of like made it seem like
I'm not going to drive the ship in that direction.
It's like, who are you?
Yeah, that won't work for me.
She's Erica Ortegas and she flies the ship.
Yeah.
That's who she is.
I know. That was a sound effect I had a couple episodes ago and I'm not looking for it right now.
Okay.
And I thought about it because I really want to. All right. But like, it's hard for me to find something like on the fly that quickly. Yeah, you know?
I know,
I mean, it's difficult.
Are you vamping? So
America.
Oh, there we go.
Ortegas. I fly the ship.
Yeah. And that's the one you have as opposed to, that's the depressing, upsetting one when she was all horribly injured.
Yeah, that one.
As opposed to the one from
the good one.
The previous season.
Right. Yeah. I'm definitely not going to look for those.
All right. Okay. All right. You don't want to vamp for another 5 minutes.
When you tempt me like that, when you dare me, you are.
How dare you dare me?
I see what you're doing.
Dare me? Dare
you forced my hand.
Indeed, but
at least you're not trying to eat us.
I believe we're on list item number 4.
Okay. I was number 3. She goes, that won't work for me. So I was gonna say she could have put some effort into not being so grumpy about it, and that suggestion would have been fine. Like if she worded it differently, you know. And she's also in that same thing. She goes like, we should just do some super dangerous shit that I've never done before, but it's all good. So not only is her attitude bad, but she seems to have kind of like a death wish approach about it. So she's gambling with her life
and the lives of everyone else.
That's reckless if you drive the ship.
And then Una says, you have your orders. And Ortega's, she was just all huffy about it. Mm-hmm. You know, number 4, she blamed Uhura. We already mentioned this when mm-hmm. Uhura was just doing her job. When Una asked if there was evidence that the Klingons knew anything about
evidence,
that the Klingons knew they were there, and Uhura just read her data and was just like, I don't hear any data.
Yes, I'm sorry. Right. Was it data?
Read her data. Read her data.
Read her lore.
Read her, not just data.
Read her B4.
Did what? Y'all must be mistaken.
Indeed.
So Uhura was just like, I don't hear anything. And then she was all,
I don't get it.
She's like, why don't you do that? Why didn't you say you saw something when you didn't? Why didn't you lie for me?
I don't get it.
And then number 5, Ortega's bumped into the asteroid, quote unquote, accidentally, because she was like, it's hard to steer this slow, you know. And it's presumably to try and alert the Klingons that they were there so she could go through with her plan
fast.
You remember that when she bumped into that asteroid?
I remember when she bumped into that asteroid.
That asteroid. That was an interesting one, because like, it wasn't 100%, like, that only until the second view. Mm. I mean, I'm sure a bunch of people were like, I knew right then and there that she did that on purpose, but you couldn't say for certain that she would. I don't think you could say for certain that she did it on purpose at that first watch through.
They built it up nicely.
Yeah.
I will mention that this is a good time to note another one of my minor critiques is I didn't buy this.
Sabotage.
I didn't buy this flying sneakily so close to this Klingon battlecruiser.
That you didn't buy that would work?
I mean, it's just like adding implausibility on top of like individual things may be more plausible. This was
they went calm silent. They were calm silent.
Yeah, I get
it's like
it.
In a submarine.
Yeah, do it. Yeah, and including in a submarine, do it from far away. You could still have it be effective and still be have tension. It looked like they were like 1,000 feet from me. He's like, you're just sneaking by. The Klingons aren't going to look out the window. The Gorn aren't going to look out the window. Again, it's just because they did this 2 episodes ago and now they're doing it again in a less plausible situation where there's less going on. So anyway, just calling that out. This is one of the ones where I was mildly aggravated by this one because I was like, that's not even plausible. The other ones are plausible and become less plausible when stacked on top of each other. This one was just sort of like, you're not sneaking this big old Constitution class ship by these
Finish
Klingons.
Your thought, Lieutenant.
All right. Back
Don't
to
think about it. Just hang on.
Back to the list.
Back to the list that we are reading for you. Oh, yeah. Bring on the list, oh, baby, all night long. Mm-hmm. Back to the list that we are reading for you, baby, all night long. Just you and me. What?
I said, can we get back to
that? Is that from your album?
Yeah. I don't know what just happened. I think I blacked out. So, there's that. And then... So, she did that on purpose.
This is 5?
Number 5. Okay, and so there was Ortega's bump. Okay, no, I did that already. Because of the frozen volatiles, remember when Spock was talking about...
Detecting frozen volatiles forming.
There was frozen volatiles. They were going 1/6 impulse, but they had to slow to 1/8 impulse, mm-hmm. which is a bummer because it slowed it from 4-hour ETA to a 6-hour ETA. And then we see Ortega slow down 1/6 with her pinky, but then the camera... pans away from her, mm-hmm. and you can't see what she's doing, but mm-hmm. but you can tell from the sound it's going down. She's going down to 1/6, 1/8.
It goes back up.
It's going back up.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, you don't see it when it goes back up, but you hear it go beep 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 back up.
Can you play that one more time, just so the audience can pay special attention, because that's a great audio find.
It's the audio find segment. She slows down from 1/6 to 1/8 impulse, goes back up to 1/6, and you can hear it. Yep. And so we see her do that with Pinky. Yeah. So the camera moves away, but we don't see that she's putting it back up. I'm surprised that Una didn't hear that, but I guess that only the audience can hear that kind of noise. I guess it's not that loud. By the way, I want to know who is responsible for making all of the crazy fucking like ship noises, like throughout every Star Trek.
If you just
listen to the like, and every show has its own set of like background ship beeps and boops, like, and they're all distinct for each show. And yeah, and I'm not even just talking about that one where you hear it go down and up. I'm talking about like the ship has background noises, like when no one's talking, and it's almost, it blends in so well that you almost don't notice it, but like it's all adds to the ambiance of just like, I think it's great because someone's designing that sound all the way through, and that takes a lot of effort, and it, and to make it blend in like that is great. Also, somebody's putting a lot of effort into foot, like echoey footsteps, like shoes.
Feet steps,
because there's a lot.
We got a good Foley department, I'll tell you what.
There's a lot of cloppity clops that go
cloppity
on.
Cloppity clop, Foley.
I want to see a documentary on the person who makes all the background beepsy boops on the beepity boops in all the Star Trek shows.
Would you want to do
that job? Would you want to make beeps and boops?
I mean,
I would.
I wouldn't turn it down.
We should do that together.
Yeah, we should.
You wouldn't kick the beeps and boops job out of bed?
No.
Is that what you're saying, Dan?
I wouldn't. All right. So actually, at this point in time, I hadn't even noticed the sound speed down and speed up thing. I didn't only notice that until the second view through. But at that time, I was wondering in my head, I was like, I wonder if she's going to try to sabotage.
Sabotage.
Their thing so she can go through with her plan. I was thinking that. And it turns out I was right because I'm so smart. Yeah. But
or the writers and producers laid clever clues that your brain was able to pick up.
Yeah, but I think
draw that conclusion.
But I think I picked it up better than most.
All right.
I don't think everyone picked that up.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Why are you trying to downplay like my intelligence? Is it threatening to you? Is my intelligence threatening to you?
You're right all the time. I mean,
yes,
he doesn't
very,
like
very
it.
Clearly it's threatening to me. What do you think?
Number 7. After the Klingons detect them, Una and company are trying to figure out what to do. Una is like, inform them we are on a rescue mission, that we aren't trying to land. And you can see Ortega's all shake her head slightly. She's like, She's like, no. She's getting frustrated. Number 8. Then Ortega's gets all pissed after Una's like, raising shield sends the wrong message. Mm-hmm. And she's like, why do we care what they think what we're doing? Why do we care what they think we're doing?
I'm enjoying
on
these,
the way to work.
Yeah, these line readings.
why do we care what they think? Is that what she says? What does she say? She says,
I don't know, man.
I'm trying to find the line now.
It was like when Dan fights with his own notes. Like arguing with his own notes.
Sometimes I write them too quickly. Why do we care what they
Finish your thought, Lieutenant.
Snap out of it!
Physician, heal thyself, Dan.
I'd like to consider myself a work in progress.
Why do we care what they think? This is pointless.
Now, to be clear, that this is pointless was part of the quote.
Yeah, it was.
not Dan just getting suddenly exasperated with this podcast. 290,
this is irrelevant.
298 episodes in.
This is all pointless.
All
why are
like,
we even doing this?
This is pointless. There's only 10 minutes left in the podcast.
Okay, almost
it.
Done. Almost
Let's
done.
Just quit.
Okay, I'll zip through it. Anyways, yeah. So Una's like, we don't want to send him the wrong message. And then Ortega's like interrupts her and is like, why do we care what they think? You know, they already know we're here, basically. Mm-hmm. And so she's getting heated at this point. Then number 9, finally, after the Klingons have raised their shields, Una's like, fine, Ortegas, do your plan. And Ortega goes, gladly, like all like snarkily, all petulant. Yeah. She was petulant. Would you call her petulant?
There were moments of petulance here, yes.
Well, I think when the way she said, when she said gladly, that was yeah. I felt that was kind of petulant. Because she was like, I'm glad we're doing the thing I wanted to do all along. You know, like, that's how she was. She wasn't like that bad, but you know.
Yeah. Well, it's...
I'm hyperbolizing to put a point across.
I often
hyperbolize.
I enjoy when Star Trek does these stories. It's a good setting to do these stories discussing sort of the nature of chain of command, and I'm not just referring to chain of command, parts 1 and 2, but more generically, it's come up frequently. It's a very common thing where there's some disagreement with the orders from above. Now, it might be from admirals and the captain disagrees. It might be that the captain makes an order and the first officer or somebody else disagrees.
That's like, an order.
Like in this case.
You have your orders.
But particularly for a civilian, it's always interesting to think about these life and death situations where somebody's got to make a decision and what would you do, because there's people value individual contributions. And
oh, I never meant to do that.
Plenty of Star Trek stories about, you know, somebody being right against all odds and they have to convince everybody. But also, yeah, if you don't follow the chain of command, you can risk everyone's lives, which Ortegas did indeed do. Yeah. And important to this plot is that, as it turns out, Pike and Mbenga were going to escape regardless. They were just going to take the Klingon shuttle.
Irregardless, even.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's not a word.
I know it's not, but we're not going to make a big deal about that.
Irregardless.
Let's not fight.
I've heard people argue that it is actually a word.
Well, about
you
words.
You can argue that any word
anything's a word, because words are just social constructs, and it's really about how many people agree whether it's a word or not. Just like the fact of the matter is as frustrating as it may be to folks like me, decimate now means to totally annihilate. It no longer means to reduce by one-tenth, or that's now a secondary or tertiary meaning, even though that's the only way that word makes any sense, is decimate literally means to reduce by one-tenth. But,
or like literally, it doesn't mean like in print anymore. Yeah.
Well, I think we're still allowed to be annoyed by it.
Hey.
No, that sends the wrong message.
Yeah. Get it? Like you were talking about messages.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
That's how words send messages.
I always get what you're saying.
All right. Now, we do have a duty or no duty. I don't want to be remiss about the duty or no
Speaking
duty.
Speaking of what we're going to do.
Yeah. It's, and it's relevant to this conversation because it's about fulfilling your duty and following orders.
Duty.
Yeah, when she goes,
disagree with me all you want. It's not your call to make.
That was the main thrust of that point. But on to duties.
But there are consequences for insubordination. I'm pulling you from the duty roster. 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 Duty roster.
What do you think, Jesse?
Duty.
I think it's a duty.
That's some 100% duty.
It's pretty clearly duty.
Duty.
Holograms?
Duty. Right. That was a code brown duty.
Code brown duty.
Does this human speak the truth?
Evasive maneuvers, Ortegas, you're up. Evasive maneuvers, Ortegas, you're up. Evasive maneuvers, Ortegas, you're up.
Human.
Man, now I want to hear I know you won't have it, but I want to hear the Klingon when they're talking in Star Trek 3. There's the Klingon.
We haven't even done that.
Who's talking? We did Star Trek 3.
No, we didn't.
We did a two-part Star Trek last year.
Like last year.
It was a great episode. It was two great podcast episodes. It was really good.
It was maybe magical.
You might be right.
I'm 100% right.
He's all the way right.
All the way.
Yeah, I don't know if I have that. I don't know if I have that.
All right, don't worry about that. But that's what it reminded me. It reminded me the pronunciation. I think she might come from the same region as the Klingons in
Are you talking about this?
Movie.
That one?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we'll continue along because we do have to conclude the episode, but there are going to be bits and bobs, tchotchkes and watchkes. Is that what we call them?
Nooks and crannies?
Odds and ends. We used to call them odds and ends.
Mbenga says he never gets caught. What is this a thing? Like, he's like, I never get, he's like, I'm captain, I'm insulted. And he's like, Captain Pike's like, he never gets caught. Yeah. He's like, I never get caught. Is that referencing something that I forgot about?
Well, I mean, he did murder, he did assassinate the Klingon ambassador. He didn't get caught for that.
That's true. But I mean, I don't know if there was some kind of specific thing.
I did like to tag on to that. One of my odds and ends was to point out that they're reinforcing what they've mentioned a little bit before, that Mbenga and Pike like to party.
Yeah, and they're talking about Vidalin cigars, which I don't think are any normal cigars.
No.
Who smokes a cigar and throws up the next day if it's a normal cigar?
Tobacco.
Is it one of those left-handed cigars?
One of those snake leaf cigars? Left-handed cigars. And also, yeah, so they did party. I guess so they're inebriating, we can guess. There was something about, they were talking about Zeta Borealis in this episode, and in Hegemony Part 2, they were talking about some Vallejo Beta. So there's a Zeta Borealis, and there's a Vallejo Beta. They were partying on Zeta Borealis, and Vallejo Beta,
that
I think is
made up.
The Vallejo Beta was something to do with the Gorn. They went to Vallejo Beta, and some Gorn shit went down. That was, they were talking about. So I just thought, I don't know, for some reason I kept, when I heard Zeta Borealis, I couldn't stop thinking about Vallejo Beta. Zeta Borealis, Vallejo Beta. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
I totally know what you're saying.
What'd you think of the gravity hilarity?
Oh, yeah. You
know. We should mention it.
I think it was interesting how they Scotty's idea to counteract the gravity was to like fire impulse engines in alternating directions. It's like, yeah, sure, why not?
I don't know why it'd have to be alternating direction. Why, just moving in one direction should be sufficient to give everyone thrust gravity.
Well, maybe if they wanted to still move in a fairly straight line. Because if they keep going in one direction, just spin in circles, I guess. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know if it was an accurate thing to do, but I just thought it was interesting. I was like, okay, sure, why not?
The whole scene with the Enterprise warping into the atmosphere and stuff, it was fine. It was cool. The problem is it almost automatically evoked that scene from Battlestar Galactica where they warp into the atmosphere and just fall down. And that's one of the most thrilling space scenes, space adventure rescue scenes ever. And this didn't come close to that.
No.
So it's kind of like you might want to just stay away from that because it's just going to be invite comparison.
But what I always enjoy a scene where, whether it's from the perspective of the warp, the FTL flyer, or from the perspective of the outside watching FTL come in, when you're from the perspective and all the stars are all blurry and then you stop and everything's frozen.
Or if
you're watching from the outside and you see the ship, like everything zipping out of nowhere and it's all blurry and then it just stops. Like, I always thought that was a cool view. Speaking of blurry, the BBs, there was that one weird BB scene where you see this BB face and he moves his face. If you look closely, it does this weird, like, flickering blur effect.
Bad special effects effect?
It's a blurry BB.
I think it was just supposed to be like, make it look cool. It's like, look at this crazy creature moving all weird. Like, you know how, like, when they were also doing the thing where they're like bones crack back into place. It's like, why
a little stereo.
Yeah, but like when horror movies, they're always doing these weird quick shots of like, oh, I'm moving
it's,
all
it's
quick.
Meant to be uncanny, and it's that works the first time, but then you got to come up with other ways to be uncanny.
Yeah, and I don't know,
uncanny movements and stuff like that.
And I didn't get the timestamp, but like if you rewatch the part, you see his close up of his face, and he moves it to the side, and it's like this weird blur that seemed intentional, like they were trying to make it look creepier or something. And I don't know.
I thought some of the zombie stuff in terms of production design was not
zombies.
As great. Like you mentioned, the blood and some of this other stuff. But all the space stuff, all the flying around stuff was really great. The walking in the jungle.
Walking in the jungle. What you going on today?
The Klingon skeleton was cool. The human foot in a boot was cool.
Human foot in a boot.
The the space plant was super Star Trek-y.
This Klingon
was
like ribs are like, all like a honeycomb. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, there was a bunch of crazy
stuff. Did you ever hear the story about this guy we know? We all know him. His dog like went into the local park and came out and apparently had a deer leg in his mouth. Not the guy, his dog did.
Yeah, I think I did hear that story.
The dog didn't kill the deer, but apparently found it.
I find deer legs in this park over here all
this
the time.
Guy
gross.
Yeah.
That's gross.
All right, we've got to finish things up. So last bits, last odds and ends. Spit them out.
Battelle was talking about, like, he was like, Pike was talking about, like, Battelle was like, she won't criticize my decorating choices anymore. I don't know what that was even referring to.
Because she's moving away.
Yeah, but like, why did they even mention, like, it's like they were making a joke about something they've never made a joke about before. Yeah, there was like referencing nothing.
It was so banal it passed me by, but you're right.
Pass me by.
Sounds like bullshit.
Yeah, it's just some character development stuff.
It was, I was just getting used to her decorating choices. I just don't know what the point of that whole whatever.
Well, you know, it's just, you know, showing that they like each other.
They like each other.
They like each other.
Chrissy Chappell.
We like each other too.
Chrissy Chappell.
And we like the audience. We're big fans of the audience.
Whose audience?
You know, what we've decided to do, Dan and I talked about it, and though about 10 minutes ago he was about to give up on the podcast entirely.
Yeah.
It's pointless. he's decided to keep trucking
Chrissy
for a little bit.
Chrissy Chappell. Her mom calls her Chrissy.
Yeah. So next week we will be discussing episode 4 of season 3 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and that episode is called A Space Adventure Hour.
Whoa.
I think it's going to be a wacky.
Is it going to be an hour-long episode?
Goofy episode is my guess.
How do you feel about Vulcans regulating pain through mind melds? It's just like another thing they could do. Of course Vulcans can
I think
do that,
that's
right?
been that's been previously. That, I think Tuvok did that, I think, before.
You know, and this was definitely, this was another one of those episodes where, like, the captain was like, I'm going to go against the rules and I'm going to do some shit. We're not, you don't have, nobody has to do it. You know, nobody has to be part of it. This is off the books. And,
but I'm taking
and,
this
and,
guy.
And you guys, actually, everybody has to be a part of it because they got to, like, fly the ship and shit.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
like,
exactly,
everyone's doing but part of it. And they kind of needed them. Yeah. Okay, yeah. But so next week we'll talk Space Adventure Hour.
All right.
And then after that, we'll keep talking about Strange New Worlds until it stops showing new episodes. Dan's got something to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's one more thing. Pike was talking about, we got to go to the roof, but that means we got to engage with the bibbies. And Mbega was like, don't call them that. They were once Federation scientists. And Pike goes, and Klingons, as if science. The and Klingons part is supposed to make what he said better. Like, how does Mbenga saying that they were Federation scientists make calling them bibbies bad? And the fact that they were once Federation scientists doesn't make calling them bibby bad. And the fact that they were once Klingons, the fact that they were once Klingons doesn't make calling them bibbies good. It's irrelevant. I don't know why it was a weird. I don't know why. I just didn't understand that. You know, it's like don't call them that, they were scientists. He's like, well, they were Klingons too. Like, it doesn't, who cares if they were scientists or Klingons? They're bibbies now. Yeah. That's all that matters.
And I'm
that's
sure...
the one thing people never get when they become bibbies, is that's not your mom anymore. That's not your mom anymore. It's a bibby.
And by the way, I'll give you an example. Brain Dead or Dead Alive, depending on which title you prefer, Peter Jackson zombie movie. I love that zombie movie. I'm sorry.
Zombies.
I love that movie because it reverses everything. In that movie, the guy, his mom turns into a zombie and he ends up
zombies
instead of being blocking the zombies from outside. You know, he's holding up in the house and keeping them outside. It's the reverse where he's keeping all the zombies inside
zombies
because he doesn't want to lose his mom.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It was a classic when they went through the window. All the bibbies went through the window. That was a classic bibby movie scene right
very,
there.
Very classic.
If Pike had never picked up that.
If Mbenga
had never picked up that knife that Bytha dropped, would she not have.
Bytha knife?
When Bytha dropped the knife, If Mbenga didn't pick up the knife, would she have no choice but to not fight him?
Hello, Mutta.
No, because she was.
Hello, Fada.
She dropped the knife and she was like, Mbenga, pick up.
Drop the knife?
She
and you thought it wise to express that concern to me in the middle of executing orders?
I'm sorry.
Snap out of it!
No, I won't.
So, because Bytha wanted Mbenga to pick up the knife so she could fight him honorably. But what if he never picked up the knife? Would she not be able to fight him then?
I can't really get it.
I don't know.
I can't parse what you're saying because it sounds so fucking hilarious.
When Bytha dropped the knife off.
Okay, anyway, we gotta go.
But I'm sorry. I know we have to go.
No,
Klingons have to. Klingons want to fight with honor. So if he didn't pick up the knife, would they not? Okay, I give up.
I agree, but I encourage the audience, please.
Never do that again.
Write in at feedback.
This can't ever happen again.
Feedback at discussstartrek.com with your response to whatever Dan was talking about. or you can respond to us on social media.
Bytha dropped the knife and Mbenga picks up the knife. He has to fight Bytha, but if he never picks up the knife, then Bytha can't fight him because it's not honorable.
You can interact with us on social media at It's Got Star Trek, wherever, you know, Blue Sky and all that jazz, YouTube, Facebook, all that. All that Blue Sky is really
that rhythm.
Most of the parties at Blue Sky.
No, I do not need the monster today.
Well, I'm not a monster.
Monster.
But yes, anyway, okay, we'll talk to you again.
It's quiet as a library out there. Total calm silence out there. Not even a whisper.
We'll talk to you.
A whisper.
We'll whisper at you next week. Bye bye.
Say hi to our dust. I call for Hofrupa.
You remember Zeta Borealis? The moment our shuttle landed, you kicked open those storm doors and you threw up.
If memory serves, it was those Vidalans, the guys we smoked the night before.
Well, those Vidalans knew how to throw a party, let's be honest.
Definitely worth a headache.